Hippocrates is said to have said, "Let food be thy medicine, and let medicine be thy food." What he said so long ago leads us to ask, which food makes the best medicine?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with your host, Michael Olson. And now get ready for 1 hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 1380th edition of the Food Chain Radio Show and podcast. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends over there in Paphos who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What. Folks, I was once commissioned by an environmental organization to identify a farm crop that could bring people back to the agricultural lands above Paphos, Cyprus. The Cypriots had abandoned the land to work in the casinos that were sprouting up like mushrooms along the Mediterranean coast. I was in from California to come up with some ideas. The land in question was situated high above the legendary birthplace of the legendary Aphrodite, the Greek goddess of love. As we traveled by car through the district, I marveled at how the farms were situated with respect to their environment. The land itself was tilted perfectly so as to capture the maximum amount of sunlight bouncing off the blue waters of the Mediterranean. Plants growing on those lands had to be engineered so as to be powerfully charged with solar energy. Sure enough, when we stepped out of the air-conditioned car, the fragrance of wild herbs simply overwhelmed the senses. There's the crop, I thought. But what could one do to the crop to make it valuable enough to bring people back to the land? Today, I sit with the perfect people to ask that question. They are Karen Fortin and Delmar McComb, owners and farmers at Blossoms Biodynamic Farm in Corralitos, California. Welcome. Karen, you first. Hello.
Good morning.
Hello, good.
And thank you.
Delmar.
Thank you, Michael. It's good to be here.
You know, I just learned that I've had a long relationship with Delmar, at least, because he was a victim of my book, Metro Farm, and a long time ago.
Yeah, I think in the mid-90s, I checked it out of the library. I lived in La Honda at the time and started reading it and got very inspired by the stories of people.
You know, it's really the stories of people, isn't it?
Yes.
That make it fun. Now you're the story, just like that. So happy to have you both here. So I thought about titling this segment of the Food Chain, Lotions, Potions, and Notions. Would that be fair enough?
I think that's an aspect of what we're doing, but I think if you see as potions as medicine, not just for the skin, also for the soul, and that they're made with plant beings and come from the land and connects people to the land, then I would say yes.
Good. Delmar?
I completely agree. Yeah, a very holistic lotion, potion, notion farm we are.
Good. All right. Well, tell us a little bit about Blossoms Biodynamic Farm. Let's start there. Delmar?
Well, Karen and I met about...
Was it love at first sight?
Should I tell a story?
Yeah, please go.
Our first date was in a brew pub in Mountain View, I believe. And we met online. So
Green
that was our first in-person meeting. But I had a kind of a small homestead garden at the time in Bonnie Doon. And Karen had just come out to California from the East Coast and had discovered Esalen and then was working with permaculture folks in Berkeley, Oakland. So I was interested in biodynamics probably for the last 33 years.
So what is it that caught your attention first about biodynamics? And then Karen?
Yeah. Well, here's a little vignette. My science degree is in horticulture, and I was working at a private estate in Woodside, California. And we had to contract some work out. And the contractor said, you know, we were talking about gardens. And he said, you need to get away from this reductionist NPK thinking. you should read a book called Secrets of the Soil, which was is still a good read by Tompkins and Bird. And so I took them up on that challenge because my background was science. And the opening pages was this a picture of people standing around a hole filled full of horns. And they were talking about something called biodynamics. And I had no idea what this whole thing was about, but it captured my
That's what horns do in biodynamics. Yeah. And when you see the horns, you got to go, what is this?
That's right. So it's like a horn could be looked at as an antenna in some ways. And that antenna brought in ideas into my head that I thought, wow, this is worth exploring.
Mm-hmm.
So, and just to fast forward, I became interested. I've always kept that interest, but also got interested in permaculture. I maintained some of my knowledge of chemical agriculture. But what kept coming back to me was biodynamics. Like, wow, this is the holy grail of agriculture, health, farming. It's all in one thing. It's just not the easiest thing to wrap your head around. But once you do, the whole world opens up in a new way.
To me, it's kind of like the purest sense of regenerative agriculture.
So what is being called regenerative nowadays, which is wonderful, takes many of its precepts from biodynamics. But biodynamics also still goes beyond even regenerative in the sense that it acknowledges that we're embedded in the cosmos. It's not just we're looking down at the ground, like, what can I do to my soil to make it more fertile? It's looking like what's happening above. There's this whole symphony of things going on up above, cascading down to us, albeit in microdosing, if you want. Wait, what's happening with Saturn, Jupiter? What is going on with the seasons? If you factor all that in, you get the most sustainable regenerative farming you can possibly do. And guess what? It's free if you do it right.
It's free. Lovely. You know, F.H. King once wrote a book called Farmers of 40 Centuries.
Right.
I suspect those farmers of 40 centuries were pretty intuitive biodynamic farmers when it gets right down to it.
Yeah. So intuitive is an interesting word. You could say the quote unquote modern human has lost a lot of intuition. I mean, we haven't, but it's gotten overcome by whatever, the internet or something like that. So biodynamics doesn't seek to go backwards. It actually says, hey, we still have these capacities to be intuitive, but we have to develop them in an objective way. And we can do that through certain practices and certain knowledge. And we can create a whole new paradigm for the world in going forward, not trying to go backwards.
Well, there's been so much talk about green lately, last couple decades maybe, but I always thought it should start with brown in the soil.
Right. Yeah. No, everything. I mean, we have a friend who does a study of the soil. You can actually join this group. You stick a shovel in the soil weekly for a whole year and take the soil out and look at it. And it's remarkable how it changes just that same patch of soil throughout the year, just through the seasons. But imagine with cultural practices, how you can influence the soil by adding in organic matter, fertility, and the worms come, microbes come, the vitality comes, and then the health of people come and the plants and the animals.
All wrapped up into one.
All wrapped up into one. It's a dirty job.
And how did you come to, what do you grow on apple or on Blossom's biodynamic farm?
Yeah. Yeah, it's
besides people.
It's a mouthful.
And life and everything else.
Yeah, right? Well, that is part of our mission is to educate. But we grow a huge variety of both medicinal and culinary herbs. We also have a relatively new vegetable and strawberry aspect of our farm. We have a smaller component of animals, cows, sheep, goats, chickens, ducks. So yeah, it's kind of, in a certain sense, like an old fashioned family farm, but it's looked at as a whole organism where you're trying to create what the farm needs from within itself to the extent possible. So you're not just buying stuff in from the outside.
My grandfather's farm was like that, near Belfry, Montana. It was pretty much self-enclosed. He did go out and buy a few things, but we had all of the animals that you can possibly imagine a farm would have. We didn't buy any pesticides or anything. And so it was kind of like that.
Yeah, there's this notion. In fact, we could probably get into it. There was just a very
recent
article in the New York Times about the future of farming is more industrialization and more factory farming. That is the only way we're going to survive. Needless to say, I couldn't disagree more. And the part of the article said, well, there's this romantic notion of going backwards to grandpa's farm. And that's a complete misunderstanding of what biodynamics is trying to do. And really having animals as a farm component is absolutely essential. Mm-hmm. You know, we separate things out. We love to specialize. Okay, we put animals in feedlots, and then you have this tremendous waste product called manure. You don't know what to do with it, and it pollutes the groundwater. If you reintegrate things, you can do this at scale and create truly healthy ecosystems so that farming is not destructive. It's actually regenerative.
From my observation, it appears that agriculture is going in two directions, very, very big, very, very small, and big do commodities.
Yeah.
But who the heck wants to eat commodities? It gets right down to it. So small, food and medicine. So what is the relationship between your food crops and your medicine crops? Or are they both the same? Your food is your medicine, and your medicine is your food. First, the food. You have animals, you have strawberries, you have plants like that that are food, that you eat them as food, think of them as food. Then you have the herbs that you don't eat as food, but you consume them as medicine. Karen?
Well, it's when people come to the farmers market and they see our banner, and there's a cow in Blossoms Farms logo. And I was like, well, so what are you selling? You're selling dairy or do you have meat? And it's like, no, we are actually an herb farm. And but why is there a cow in there? It's like, well, the cow is the most beautiful animal that delivers and contributes by her soulness, by her presence, the manure that we need to grow these amazing herbs. And so what Delmo said, like, there's a fourfoldedness. There's the four elements that are in our bodies. There's the four elements on the farm. There's the soil, the plants, the animals, and the human beings. So it's a complete picture that we work with. And so you can say the plant, regardless if it's a medicinal plant or a food plant, the food plant is medicinal, and you can eat most medicinal plants as well, with exceptions, obviously. Our skincare is edible. And so the idea is like that we think food is a certain thing and everything else is something else, is just not thinking as food being nourishing more than just the body. And I think how we, our farm, would like to see ourselves is we are healing with food. We're healing with food, like you would say, with strawberries, with conventional food, but we're also healing through the skin with skin food, or we're healing the soul with essential oil sprays. There's so many ways of healing.
My goodness, you know, this is like going to church almost, because we're talking about feeding the body and we're talking about feeding the soul mm-hmm. with food. Now, that's one thing that's hard to do on a large scale farm that grows commodities. This is the Food Chain Radio program. Michael Olson. Today we're talking with the folks from Blossoms Organic Farm, Delmar and Karen, and you. Do stay tuned. When we come back, we're going to get into these medicinal herbs.
Let's go back for more of What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
All right, we're roaring along through biodynamic agriculture. But before we move on to the medicinal herbs part of it, I want to make a clarification. Karen says, wait a minute, Michael. This biodynamic is just not a boutique little thing. This is a world-changing piece of philosophy. Delmar?
It's a different type of approach to science. It includes regular science. I want to be clear about that. It includes it, but it amplifies that by including. So just quickly, regular science looks at weighing things, counting things, and measuring things. That's kind of a classic definition of science. Right. And biodynamics says, that's great. We have to do that. Absolutely. But guess what? It's leaving out half of the equation. Like everything has a polarity in the world, in the universe. So weight has a polarity. Counting has a polarity. Measuring has a polarity. So biodynamics includes those polarities. So weight, the polarity of weight is understanding of levity, actually. What are levitational forces? Everyone talks about gravity, that the apple fell on Newton's head, but no one talked about how the apple got up there in the first place. So that's a little picture of what is levity? Counting, quantity. What's the polarity of quantity? It's quality, actually, is the polarity. So you can have X bushels of corn per acre, but what are the qualities of those corns? Are they full of sugars? Are they full of minerals? Are they good for the soil? What are the qualities? So that's an understanding of quality. And the last is measurement. We can measure anything, right? Nanometers. But what's the polarity of measurement? And it's actually, I always like the musical analogy. You have measures of music, and within those measures are notes and rhythm. The rhythm is the polarity of measurement. So what that means is when you do something, anything we do, but particularly on the land with plants, is as important as what you're doing. So renewing and extending further an understanding of rhythm. So that's the little science behind biodynamics. So for those who say, oh, it's kind of
that's the church part.
Yeah. Well, you hear, oh, I like biodynamics, but it's unscientific. And I say, no, what's really unscientific is today's science because it doesn't think about those other polarities. Okay, so can you take that then and scale that out?
Yes,
and absolutely, because it's working with these free forces from nature itself, and you can harness those and put those into the land with an understanding. So you're not mining even if organics, you're mining, let's say, Chilean bat guano. Well, it's a great fertilizer, but how can you do that forever? Probably not. Can you mine forever? No. So how can you remain to be
40 centuries.
Yeah. So, and this is one way. So it's absolutely scalable.
Karen?
And it's also important to understand that if you look at the world right now, and we have thousands and thousands of acres of monocrop cultures, and that is not the future. And you mentioned feeding people with commodities, like what does that do to people? So when we say biodynamics is scale, you can scale up biodynamics, then we're not talking about large scale monocultures. Then we're actually talking about replacing these monocultures with farm individualities, with systems, with ecosystems where people are still involved in.
Mm-hmm. Now, I recently interviewed a gal who grows flowers for the farmer's market, and she's very adamant about biodynamics. But I asked her, why? I mean, it's a flower. It's a flower. You just get a flower at the supermarket and there's a flower on the table. But she said, no. And so you're doing the same thing with medicinal herbs.
Yes.
What is the impact of an herb? What impact does biodynamics have on the character of an herb plant?
There's many levels to this. You can say one impact, for example, that when you grow a medicinal plant locally, you can say then it has a different impact on your immune system. And that's like has nothing to do with biodynamics, but it has to do with locally growing your crops, either food crops or medicinal crops. Because when you feed yourself out of the local ecosystem and the local watershed, then your body actually becomes accustomed to pathogens, to the water, to the climate, and eventually it strengthens your immune system that way because you're eating out of that system. So that's one thing. And you can say that's part of biodynamics.
Home cooking, local growing, and home cooking,
you can say that's one thing. And that, but when you go to the next level, you can say, okay, this is not just growing locally, it's also looking at the cosmos. So we all are used to the influence of the moon, right? Kind of we see the moon moving the oceans or cycles with women. All the other kind of say planets actually have an influence on us. And our birth chart is basically the picture of the cosmos when we were born. And acknowledging these things, and the planets are also represented in weather. So when I work with plants, then I pay attention not only to the weather, also what the planets are doing. I pay attention to the day, the time of the day. So like, when is the sun the strongest? When is the moon the strongest? And once you start doing all these things, then you start dancing kind of with the planets, and you actually kind of start listening. For me, it's all about listening, because like conventional agriculture is, okay, you have a production plan, and today I have to harvest sage, regardless what the weather is, right? And then the production, same thing. But if you start actually listening to the weather, what is the temperature today? Kind of, are we on a waxing, on a waning moon? Which can be difficult, but it can be done on a commercial scale as well. It's an approximation then, you know, but you start paying attention. And that's actually a mantra on our farm, pay attention. It's about these beautiful relationships. It's about the relationship from the soil to the plant to the animal, and us with all the kingdoms. And once you pay attention to these things, then you actually see the relationship between the planets in your body. So your gallbladder connected to Mars, or your Venus being connected to your kidney. And actually in medieval times, you would consult the stars before you were doing surgery for a reason, because those stars have an influence on our body. But we just like, we lost all those things.
In listening to you, it sounds to me like you're having fun.
Oh, totally. Well, this is personal, but like before I started farming biodynamically, I really felt lost in life. I saw the beauty around myself. I was fighting for the environment. I didn't want to be a white human being because I felt shame what we're doing with the environment. And when I started farming biodynamically, and also which is based in anthroposophy, and we can talk another time about that, but I felt like it's a spiritual farming, and I felt like connected to the other kingdoms, and you can say to nature, in a way that I am part of it and I have a huge responsibility. I'm not looking down on nature. I'm actually embedded in nature, but I have a free will. And I have freedom as a human being, what nature doesn't have. But we have to basically take nature by the hand, and we have such a huge responsibility. But once we start doing that, it reveals itself to us. It's so beautiful. It's infinite, the beauty that is revealed, like by working with animals, by working with plants, by working with the soil, when you start paying attention.
You know, recently I had the opportunity to visit your farm and walk through the garden. And as I did, I would reach down and grab a leaf, steal one, and rub it between my fingers and then hold it up to my nose. And they're very powerful, greasy leaves. I mean, this zoom. Is all of that finds its way into the power, the potency of the herb?
So conventional farming and even organic farming, it tends to have an overemphasis on fertility that's based, actually centered around water. So you have these fertilizers that are, they enhance the water component of a plant, if that makes sense. So you get more pounds per acre. Let's say a butternut squash is this giant thing.
Right.
But the flesh is kind of, it's not so dense and it's more water. That's one picture. Herbs are the same. You can have this plant that just grows like crazy, but it's kind of lax and it has trouble standing straight without some kind of stake. What happens, the oils get, there's less oil. So absolutely, there's more concentration. There may be a bit less volume or matter, but it's more than made up for by the quality and the density and the nutrient density of the plant itself.
How do you get that into your bottles?
Magic.
Magic. But again, it's a dance. And I would say you just know.
Because that's what you do. You take your medicinal herbs and you have 100 herbs growing, various herbs. And through the years, you've picked up the knowledge of how to combine them to treat various symptoms. You know, I told you about my wife's vulnerability to asthma, and you said, okay, I have just the thing for it. What was it that you have?
We talked about elecampane, which is one of my favorite herbs. It always is fun also, I said, pay attention to its color, like its form. Is it annual, perennial? Is it resinous? Is it, how does it grow? What soil does it like? And also to its name. So elecampane is called Inula Helenium, like after Helen of Troy. And Helen of Troy was not a happy person. And so whenever she was crying, the story goes that when the tears were falling, elecampane was growing. And elecampane helped her with her grief. And in traditional Chinese medicine, like the lungs are where grief and sadness are stored. So we know that in our, how we hold our body, right? If we kind of strong, then our chest is out. And if we are depressed and sad, then we hold things in our chest and our lungs. And so elecampane beautifully works on chronic conditions like asthma or bronchitis, because it works on inflammation in the lungs, but it also works, and inula refers to the inulin that it has in the root, but also to the gut. So this beautiful relationship between the gut and the lungs. But it helps us through grief and sadness as well, because often it's not just having a cough, it's not just having a cold. Like often people, there's a reason why it shows itself through our lungs or through a cough. And it's pay attention again, yeah.
How do you get that into the bottle? If I know it's magic,
well,
right, but tell us about your magic.
Well, we talked about rhythm. So staying with elecampane, we work with the root, and there is a fair amount of oils in the roots. And so we harvest the roots in fall and winter, and we wouldn't harvest the root like in summer or like in spring, because the beautiful flower then goes dormant, it dies, and I think Goethe once said beautifully that every stage of the plant sacrifices itself to the next stage. And so when you imagine that, like from the germinating of the seed to the beautiful flowers, leaves and then to the flower and then kind of dying back to the root again, we want the root in its full potential. And that means working with rhythms. So when do you harvest? You also harvest in the afternoon, because that's when the energy goes inward. And then the processing is,
you know, a whole other story. It's true.
Yes.
It really is true.
It's basically working with the rhythms in nature. And yeah.
So then what do you do? How do you get the roots into the bottle?
The roots in the bottle, we chop the root. I mean, after washing, obviously, the root is chopped. And then you can either work with dried or with fresh root. Yep. And then it goes into alcohol. We work with certified cane alcohol. And cane is a bit less, it's softer than vodka or grain alcohol. And then again, the rhythm comes in. At least you want to have it extracted in alcohol for at least a month, which is a moon cycle. Because if you look at what the moon does, it's like there's a pulling and the pushing, a pulling and the pushing. And you definitely want the moon to help you make this beautiful extract. And you talk about potions, like they're potent potions. And you can potentize them by working with these beautiful rhythms.
In our culture, we love to kind of override this. We don't even think about this stuff because we want to be hit over the head with something. You know, just give me a pill that knocks me out or whatever. But becoming aware again of these beautiful rhythms and the power of them, they're incredibly powerful, but they're subtle, but they're constant and forever. And they're not reliant on anything other than an understanding. So that's why these medicines can be so powerful, and also how you get it in a bottle, because you're, as Karen already said, you're working with these natural, constant 24/7 rhythms that nature is just showering down upon us. And it's so much more, if we talk about healing, again, you can take a pill and get over something. And, you know, I've certainly had my share of pills, of painkillers or whatever, antibiotics, and they have their place. But if you really want to truly heal, you have to work with this kind of natural type of process.
How many different issues do you address with your herbs when you take them to the farmer's market?
I think that's infinite. And Rudolf Steiner said...
That's a lot.
Rudolf Steiner once said, like, if an herb is missing from your inner garden, then you or that person has to be healed with that plant. So if you look at our psyche as our body as well, being reflected in nature, so then there is an herb for everything that is in us and vice versa. And kind of working with these relationships, there is, and we are individuals, but everything that is out in nature, that is out in us, is reflected.
Wow. Okay. We're going to take a quick break. But when we come back, I want you to take us to the farmer's market, where you set up your stand and you place all of that you do in front of people, and tell us how people react, because this is something different, that this is something really different. This is The Food Chain, Michael Olson with Delmar and Karen from Blossoms Organic Biodynamic.
You can earn a substantial income by farming for the city. All you need to do is take your crop to market and win the competition for the consumer dollars. There is a well-proven strategy for winning this competition. You will find it embedded in MetroFarm, the guide to growing in or near the city for the city.
Port Ideas, Greg Williams.
There's a tremendous amount of useful information in MetroFarm for farming in or near the city.
Acres USA's Charles Walters.
MetroFarm tells how to convert an opportunity into a real going concern. Every chapter is organized around the logic of practicality. For every problem needing a solution, MetroFarm offers a progression of steps arranged in sequence so the desired goal is achieved.
Before you plant your seeds, pick up a copy of the Ben Franklin Book of the Year award-winning MetroFarm. Then plant your seeds and win the dollars. MetroFarm.com. MetroFarm.com.
We're on the farm with Joel Salatin.
Would you like to buy homemade soup, backyard chicken, and the neighbor's artisanal lunch meat? The Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund protects your right to acquire the food of your choice from the source of your choice. I'm Joel Salatin from Polyface Farm, and I urge you to defend the right of neighbors to engage in direct food commerce. Join today at farmtoconsumer.org. The food of your choice from the source of your choice. That's farmtoconsumer.org. Farmtoconsumer.org. Thank you.
When you buy local American-grown flowers, flowers will grow and flourish in America. Hello, I'm Deborah Prinzing, author of Slow Flowers for Certified American-Grown Flowers. When you buy local flowers, you're helping our country's family farms reduce the transportation footprint of flowers and enjoy fresher, longer-lasting bouquets. So please, next time you shop for flowers, think local. Think Certified American-Grown Flowers. Visit AmericanGrownFlowers.org to learn more.
History buffs, this tale from Michael Olson's Tales from a Tin Can took place aboard the USS Dale during the opening moments, 7 December 1941.
As we left our berth and got underway, the deck force was still engaged in getting ready for combat. Fuller had the job of clearing the deck of all the wooden objects that had collected in port, so Fuller was making his way aft, just tossing stuff like a madman, when he came to the ice cream freezer. Before he could toss it over the side, one of the guys said, "Hey, wait a minute!" In a matter of seconds, the lock was broken and the ice cream distributed among the crew. So, what you saw that morning was the USS Dale steaming hell-bent out to the channel while the guys back aft were standing by their guns, eating ice cream, and watching World War II break out all around.
Tales from a Tin Can contains 424 tales by 44 sailors aboard the USS Dale, from Pearl Harbor to Tokyo Bay. Order your Father's Day copy at talesfromatincan.com. That's talesfromatincan.com.
So much to say, so little time to say it, on The Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, that's for sure. We're talking biodynamic farming, and we're talking biodynamic living with Karen Fortin, Delmar McComb, owners and farmers of Blossoms Biodynamic Farm in Corralitos, California. Well, okay, so we have these wonderful products, complements of Karen and Delmar and nature amplified. And that's really what biodynamics is, it seems, is amplifying the processes of nature. And you take those forces and you put them in bottles. And you take them to the farmer's market. And what is the reaction of people? I know because I'm one of them. Who are very fascinated with the bottles. What's in the bottles, they'll say.
Well, know thy audience. Sometimes I spray people with hydrosols, which is a beautiful essential oil spray. And people are defenseless when it comes to senses. And sometimes it starts over an ailment, like someone has something that they want to be healed with from. And Delmar just said, like in biodynamics, there's no pill. There is a responsibility of the human being. So it's all about imaginations. It's just, if I just give someone a campaign for their cough, then it might do its magic silently. But it's even more potent if you point out the relationship to grief, if you point out to what the lungs are doing in your body, kind of how they open to the world, like what, how do you breathe, and how they connect it to your digestive system. So maybe it's not your lung that is kind of causing that cough, maybe it's your digestive system. And how is your digestive system? So it starts conversation about the complexity, who we are and how everything is connected. And everyone is just... interested in that.
Isn't it too complicated?
I think people can get overwhelmed for sure. Mm-hmm. But what also is more common is people get curious. Like it's like you can almost see little lights turning, like, wow, I never
thought of that before.
This.
I never.
And then, you know, you often get, like, I have to read it more about this or, mm-hmm. or whatever. So yes, you know, we're,
you mean there's something not in my Fruit Loops that I'm missing?
Right. There's a lot of things in Fruit Loops, but not the things we need. So yeah, I think we all want this simple solution to health and healing and life in general. Just give me a simple answer. But if someone's truly meant to, I think people actually come to us almost subconsciously sometimes. Like they are drawn to us and something they need to see or experience, even if they consciously don't want to.
You're in an environment of food, and not only food but local food, not only local food but food with its farmer's face on it. So these are people who grew the food, and they know what's in the food. And similarly, when they come upon your booth with its all of its bottles and the cow, it's a striking difference to the world out there, to the supermarket world, to the big box store world. And to those who are attentive, it's easy to get caught up in it, like I did. And it also, you train people. And that's must be a pretty intensive process because of all the knowledge that you have. And I've talked with your salespeople a number of times, and they seem to know. So how do they get all the information?
Well, you have to work with people who are, like Demo said, once these doors open, you really get curious. You get curious about yourself. You get curious about how are these things connected. And again, going back to the pill, a pill disempowers you. But if you start paying attention to what's going on in your body and how you have a responsibility for it and how you can change it by even by thinking, it really empowers you. And it's beautiful. And when you start kind of walking through a garden and you start smelling and seeing and tasting, it's empowering, because it's not me and my environment. It's basically the connection between the both.
Do you have your people who are selling your products come out to the farm and
yes.
walk through the farm and grab some of the leaves and rub them between your fingers?
It's both. Sometimes there's a reality, right? Like people are hired for a certain amount of time and mm-hmm. have their lives.
That's what I was wondering, yeah.
But we do, often people are part of production as well. Sometimes they work in the garden. We try to have someone involved as much as possible, because that when you actually sell our products, that you are representing, that you see literally in front of you the garden that you're talking about, that you sell in a bottle.
There you go. A garden in a bottle.
Yeah.
Good. And you say that there is an infinite number of issues that you can address with your 100 medicinal herbs and combinations thereof. So in any bottle, there might be a number of different herbs, correct?
Lately, we started making blends. Like the first years, I really religiously just made single herb. Tinctures and salves. And the reason why is because I learned that in where you are right now, so in this time and your biography, you are very different than, let's say, a week, 2 years, 20 years from now. And in anthroposophic medicine and in biodynamics, you look at the human being as threefolded. You have a nerve sense system, you have a rhythmic system with your heart and your lungs. But then you have a metabolic and reproductive system. And if you just imagine that when these three systems are in balance, then you're healthy. But if one system is totally out of whack, like let's say the lungs are inflamed, then the other two systems are also kind of suffering. So a three-system approach that you would take, like instead of just healing one system, you would actually heal all three systems. And you would do that with a triangle with three herbs. But then people come to the farmer's market and you can do only so much education. Our displays are a lot of education. Our salespeople, like we are educating a lot, but someone comes and is like, what's elecampane? So there's an elecampane tincture. So we started to do blends that are addressing these three systems.
Okay.
So like a respiratory blend is addressing kind of the anxiety that came during COVID, like with the lung inflammation. But then also supporting the immune system and the liver and the metabolic system. So you do like a system that is really looking at the human being as a whole.
Okay. Rudolf Steiner. You're selling Rudolf Steiner in a bottle to people walking by shopping for cabbage or something. And when they walk by your booth and you capture their eye, what do you say to them? You got to have some kind of something you pitch them to capture their attention.
You know, we're talking about biodynamics on this program as we speak. In general, it's not the first thing we start with at the farmer's market. We both were kind of taught, if you were, as it were, to not, you know, promote anything. We're promoting a vision, but We prefer people to ask, like, what is this biodynamic stuff? Who is Rudolf Steiner? Then you can have a conversation, but we never want to impose anything on people. So, but then that leads to another approach that Karen wants to.
Well, I think we often use in biodynamic farming the saying, spirit never without matter and matter never without spirit. And that is a saying that I use a lot, with farmers markets customers. Is because it's not just that this is a commodity or just substance. So there's energy. Like when you talk about dosage, for example, it's not a matter of quantity. You can drink the whole bottle and it doesn't do more than if you take two drops. And so all these incidents or these occasions kind of lead to further conversations.
What did Rudolf Steiner do to overturn our thinking about all of this?
Wow, that is a big question. I mean,
I know we're. I was not going to ask it, but I can't.
Yeah. So he died 100 years ago, almost exactly, in 1925. So he was alive at the beginning of the last century and in the late 1800s. His work covered every aspect of human existence. It was education, medicine, architecture, new art of eurythmy, agriculture, etc. So, for example, the biodynamic lectures came right towards the end of his life in 1924, and he'd been pestered, if you will, to give these lectures. Like, can you tell us something about farming? Anyway, he was an esotericist, a scientist, a philosopher. He edited Goethe's scientific papers when he was a man in his 20s, a completely brilliant savant. Some would say, I would say, completely a clairvoyant kind of master, because of so many things he said at the time were laughed at. And then now our science, today's science, has proven them to be true. So he is someone that should be listened to and is still being discovered today. Economics is another one. Like, what did he say about economics? And he had a lot to say. And are we doing any of that in this world? No. And look at our world. So in back to agriculture, he finally said, okay, I will give these indications of what I think has to happen. Because what farmers were seeing even 100 plus years ago at the very beginning of chemical agriculture was a decrease in fertility of animals. The land was getting worse and worse already. This is 100 plus years ago. So he gave these indications of biodynamic farming. And that gave rise to modern day organic farming. But organic farming kind of took the holistic part of biodynamics and said, let's leave the cosmic part out because that's just a little too strange.
Let's leave God out of the picture.
But there's a, you know, it's not, it doesn't have to be God. It just, there's forces in the world streaming to us. So, but here we are 100 years later. And what, look at the world. It's complete chaos. And yet Steiner still hasn't really been taken up by the masses. So we kind of sometimes will say, you know, there's really not too many other places to turn anymore. Maybe we should start listening to what this person said, because so much of what he did say has been proven to be valid and worth exploring. So that's kind of where we're at.
And all of this is in the bottle, in the bottles. And, you stand there in front of all of these people drifting by and smile. And I notice that more and more and more people seem to stop by. I'm being a farmer's market nut. I watch people in the booths and whatnot. And I notice more and more people starting to stop and ask questions.
Well, interrupt Karen, because Karen's, you've heard her paint pictures of Ella Campaign, for example.
Yes.
And she'll spend the time with people.
Yep.
And so she's developed this following, and it's spreading, it's spreading, it's spreading. And guess what? It often very much helps people. So anyway, go ahead.
Well, I think that's one thing, starting a conversation and asking questions. And then the word is out, because if something works, you know, there's accountability, which is no longer out there in the world. You buy something for 99 cents that was made in China and it doesn't work and you throw it out, right? There's no accountability anymore. If your product works, the community talks and people come back. So I think we've been around for...
Farmers market being the perfect word of mouth.
Yes.
Place, yeah.
Yes, and
food
and
with its farmer's face on it.
Food with a farmer's face on it. And it really helps, for example, at the live oak market that our apothecary, we call it, is right next to the vegetables. And I always point out, food is medicine, medicine is food. It's like, oh, really? And then they realize that actually there can be one farm individuality, and that is actually that their skincare is food for their body as much as the cabbage that they buy.
How can people tune in to you and biodynamics?
We do have a newsletter. If you go to our website, blossomsfarm.com, on the homepage, you can scroll down and sign up to our newsletter. We're on Facebook and social media. And those are also on our website. And
anywhere in the world.
Anywhere in the world. Like we do have 3,500 people on our newsletter, like in Sweden and Japan, you name it. And we do give workshops. And by the end of the year, through a newsletter and on social media, we will announce our workshops. We also have a nonprofit, millefolium.org, which is the Latin name of Achillea millefolium as yarrow. And so we have a nonprofit that is about 2 years now, and that is really taking off. And we will have a whole range of educational offerings there as well. And what do I forget, Dummer?
Well, you've already mentioned the farmers markets, but yes. In Santa Cruz, the West Side farmers market on Saturdays, the Cabrillo market on Saturdays, the Live Oak on Sundays.
So for our audience in Ushuaia, Tierra del Fuego, Blossoms Biodynamic Farm.com.
No, blossomsfarm.com.
Blossomsfarm.com.
And you can shop online. Yeah.
And you can follow us too. There it is.
Karen Fortin and Delmer McComb. I figured that this show would be a lot of fun doing, and it really is. And for those of us who would like to get involved, just tune in. That's all you have to do, right?
Tune in, and next year we'll have volunteers days again, like Friday morning from 8 till 12, and you can have your hands in the dirt and harvest with us.
There you go. Beyond anything, put your hands in the soil.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with Michael Olson. And if your friends missed the show, tell them to log on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find some food with its farmer's face on it and live.